And before we get into the newscast, we want to thank someone for being part of our spring membership drive. David Palmer, thank you for your donation. For KFSK News, I'm Angela Denning. Today is Friday, May the 6th. Thanks for joining us. Petersburg's Borough Assembly on Monday came close to voting down a proposed budget for next year. The spending plan narrowly passed in first reading, despite some questions from assembly members about the police department's budget. Joe Vicknicki reports.
For the fiscal year that starts in July, the budget proposal would increase spending in the borough's general fund by nearly $1 million, just under 10%, boosting that number to more than $10.7 million. It would add staff in a couple departments while keeping tax rates the same as this year for the most part. The plan would also use over $265,000 of general fund reserves to balance revenue and spending. Assemblymember Dave Kensinger was a vote against the budget in its first reading. He wanted to avoid spending reserves if possible and suggested looking into scheduling for police officers.
And I don't have any preconceived notion on this. I don't know whether we have enough policing coverage in town or too much, but I think it's worth looking at.
An internal report by the borough this winter looked at a few different scheduling options along with salary comparisons to other communities. Based on that report, the assembly ended up approving a boost in pay along with recruitment and retention incentives for both officers and dispatchers. That's part of the $191,000 increase in spending in that department anticipated for next year. However, spending is going up in almost all other departments and utilities under the proposal. Kensinger thought scheduling changes could mean a reduction in the number of police officers and a smaller budget.
I think our budget has been saved, and the ratepayers and the property taxpayers in town have been saved because we've gotten quite a bit of money from the federal government and from the state government through CARES funding, and I don't anticipate that money to be available like it has been in past years.
The borough has used one-time pandemic emergency funding to pay for some police and fire expenses. It also has a healthy and growing reserve in the general fund. That reached $7.7 million last year. Assemblymember Jeff Mucci also was a no vote because of questions about the police department. He cited records he's been pouring through to determine the amount and types of police calls in recent years.
I'm just trying to go through each of those years and understand what the bulk of the calls are to the police department and making sure I understand what's going on at the police department better than I do right now. We'll have time to talk about it some more, but at this point, I'm not going to support it in this first reading.
Meanwhile, Mayor Mark Jensen said he had a couple of questions on the budget but would be voting for it.
But I'm looking forward to the public hearing and to see if we get any input from the public. But overall, I think it's a pretty good budget. I can see why things are going up.
The borough is expecting more funding from the state in the upcoming year and is also reporting increases in local expenses, 2 to 2.5% more for the cost of labor contracts, along with an expected increase in the borough's insurance payments. The budget adds a building maintenance employee and an additional job in the harbor department. Revenue is expected to increase from both sales and property taxes. The finance department reports that local sales last year remained flat, while a new source of revenue, sales from online orders shipped to Petersburg, continued to rise. The budget assumes the same property tax rate for Service Area 1 and a small increase for the rest of the borough. The budget would boost the school district's contribution from $1.8 million to $2 million. That's the first change for that payment in over a decade. The borough also earmarked $200,000 in federal pandemic relief money for deferred maintenance at the schools. The spending proposal would keep the funding for community service organizations, KFSK, the Clausen Museum, and Mountain View Manor Food Services at or just above this year's level. The assembly has been approving rate increases for most of the enterprise funds that include local utilities. And this budget has some major capital projects. The largest are an overhaul of the Blind Slough Hydro Plant, dredging in South Harbor, and renovation work at the community pool. The vote was 4-3 to approve the budget in its first reading, with Mucci, Kensinger, and Tom Fine Walsh voting no. There will be two more votes on the spending plan, including a public hearing later this month. Throughout that process, assembly members can vote on any additions or subtractions they'd like to see. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
Southeast Representative Jonathan Kreis-Tompkins announced in March that he would not be seeking re-election after serving for a decade in the State House. Two candidates so far have filed to fill that seat, representing Sitka, Petersburg, and Yakutat. Catherine Rose spoke with Rebecca Hemshute, a local educator and sitting Sitka Assembly member, to learn why she's seeking a higher office.
When I call Rebecca Hemshute, she's on a 20-minute break at work. She's an education specialist at Keet Gushaheen Elementary in Sitka. She's taught at the elementary school for 18 years, but has 30 total years in education under her belt.
So over the years, I've followed what's happening in Juneau and just kind of kept my head down and did the best I could for the 20-some kids in my classroom. And now as a specialist, I have 35 kids on my caseload. And I've just always put an emphasis on making things work for them the best I could. And over the years, I've noticed that there's so much more that we could be doing and that we need to be doing. Our schools and our kids reflect our community.
Hemshute has a predilection for public service. She was a page in her home state of Iowa's House of Representatives and watched her father make a bid for a seat. Then when she got to Sitka over 30 years ago, she met Ben Grusendorf, an educator and one of the longest-serving members of the Alaska House.
He was a teacher, and I wasn't sure that I was going to go into teaching, but I thought I was going to go into teaching, and I was so impressed. And I was kind of mentored a little bit by Ben, and he got me a position as a page in Juneau as well. So in a way, I'm kind of going full circle here by wrapping back around.
Hemshute was appointed to the state's Board of Education in 2016, and in October of 2020, she was elected to the Sitka Assembly. She says her experience on the Assembly prompted her to want to run for a seat on the legislature.
The Assembly has been a really pivotal thing for me. I was compelled to run for Assembly, I think, because I saw our community struggling and I thought there's more we could do. But what I have really enjoyed about the Assembly is it's sort of pragmatic problem solving. We're looking collectively at how to improve Sitka, and we aren't really looking politically at how to improve Sitka.
The Assembly is a nonpartisan body, but Hemshute says there's still diversity of opinion on it, and even so, they've managed to work together. The independent candidate hopes to take some of that energy to Juneau with her.
I think there's just some really important issues that we need to be working on. I think if we can take the same model our Assembly uses, which is a productive, collaborative process, that's going to really help how things get done in Juneau. Our problems are too big to bicker. We need to get to work.
Hemshute has a lot of ideas for how she can better serve Sitkans and voters as a state representative. Through her lens of education, she wants to focus on improving the health and quality of life for families in Southeast.
You know, the thing that I know best is education, and so that's something that I talk about a lot. But we need to protect our small boat fisheries. We need to, I even see some potential solutions at the statewide level for municipal solid waste. It's a huge issue, but it's not just our community. This is a region-wide thing that we need to work on, restoring ferry service that's reliable. There's a ton of stuff we need to do. Again, when I talk about education, I'm talking about the health of the community, and education isn't just what happens in schools.
Hemshute is running to represent what was once House District 35. After some redistricting last year, the new House District 2 now includes a longer swath of the Outer Coast. It's a big area to cover, but Hemshute says she's ready to visit every community, from northernmost Yakutat, where she's never visited, to Petersburg, which she says she's fond of. She'll be going to the Little Norway Festival for the first time this summer.
So there's a lot of visiting some really interesting places ahead, and really interested in hearing. I feel like I really know Sitka's issues at this point. The Assembly has been super informative. But I want to hear about how other communities are doing in the region and find out what their issues are.
Hemshute will be taking a leave of absence from her work at Keet Gushaheen in the fall. Her plan is to visit every District 2 community twice before the election in November. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
One other candidate has filed for the House District 2 seat for the third time. Kenny Carl Skaffelstad, a Republican from Hoonah, has thrown his hat in the ring. We'll be hearing from him and other candidates later this spring on local news. The Market in Petersburg is in its 13th season, providing a shared space to sell homegrown produce and homemade items. The group supports and encourages regional vendors to sell their goods. The market also provides space for hands-on service providers and local nonprofits. This summer, they plan 7 markets every second and fourth Saturday of the month, coordinated by new market manager Brandy Mulberry. Lisa Schrammick is the market's board president. She spoke with me about the season, and she says the first market will be on May 28th and will continue to be held downtown at Inga's Galley.
We found last year there was a really good response from the vendors and also local people who were using the market. They seemed to enjoy that it was front and center downtown, so they didn't miss it. They could see the sign, notice it while they're running errands and stop by.
Now, that's all weather, right? Because there's tents.
Right. And there are some options to put up additional tents if the weather's not working for us that day, but she has those stationary tents, so it's possible to do that fairly quickly.
And in recent years, the market has actually had some grant opportunities.
Last year, we did a microgrant program. We dedicated up to $2,000 to split between folks who were excited to either upgrade their ability to provide homegrown foods or cottage foods, foods that have been altered or have value added. We specifically did that because Farragut Farm, one of our founding vendors and one of the longtime vendors, had reached a point where they wanted to split off on their own, a little more convenient for them. Through that, we were encouraging folks to focus on not only their own gardens, but being able to produce some extra to share with the community. I think one of our standout sellers from last year, Shannon McCullough, was a recipient, and she has been able to continue doing that, and we expect her as a vendor again this coming summer.
Now, Farragut Farm has been a big supporter of the market over many years, but last year they didn't take part because they were focusing on their own sales. But then this year they're actually not selling veggies locally so they can focus on improvements at their farm site. So
exactly.
How do you think that might affect, I guess, produce sales at the market?
Well, we have a couple vendors that started out selling with the market last year and related to our micro grant, like Jenna Wilson Ashby is one of our board members, and she's also a vendor, and she does some produce. We definitely invite anyone who's interested to take a look at our website, contact the Petersburg Market via the email if you have any questions. And, you know, anything you're doing, whether it's herbs, if you have extra lettuce starts, we definitely suggest that if you are growing produce, oftentimes it works better to have a partner who's also growing produce, so that whether you are growing different things or you might have a market week that's a little bit low on production, that way you have a buddy to share inventory with, set up with, all of those things. But we definitely are encouraging anybody who's interested to bring their local produce down and share it with everyone. And Maria is still a very active board member, Maria with Farragut Farms, and she's helped inspire the micro grants and is certainly still very involved.
Now, speaking of plants and growing, the growing season, there is going to be a starts swap sponsored by the market?
Yes, it's part of our push to encourage folks to grow fruits and veggies and even flowers. This will be our second event of the season. So we already had a seed swap earlier on. We will have some seeds available for free from the market, but the purpose aligned with our mission is that we're providing a space to build community around homegrown produce and flowers. And for that community, that means putting seeds in the ground, tending seeds, getting their starts going. So the idea is that folks can bring plant divisions, perennials. If you planted too many tomato starts and you won't have room, but they all came up, please bring them down and share them.
Lisa Schrammick is the market's board president. This is an abbreviated version of the interview. You can hear the whole thing online on our website, KFSK.org. The plant start swap will be tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Inga's Galley. Market vending tables are $15 each this year, or 10% of sales, whichever is less. Kids 12 and under will be free. For any vending questions, you can email the market manager at psg.market@gmail.com. The market also posts updates on their Facebook page. For KFSK News, I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.